See, I'd like to remind you about my book in case you haven't read it yet. Name of the book is Nigger. And this book's really come in handy to me. Then when I was demonstrating down south once, the sheriff grabbed me, knocked me down, kicked me, spit on me, stood me up, looked me in the eyes and said, "How you doing, nigga?" I said, "Nigga doing all right." And it is. 2 million copies. The height of my ambition is to put a nigga in everybody's home. At $4.95 per nigga. And for you youngsters that's here in school and don't have too much money and you looking for a gift to get your loved one for Christmas, give them a nigga. If you know anyone that can't afford a nigga, tell them to go to the library and steal a nigga. Yeah, I got a big program going on now where on a given day, 50,000 people across this country are walking to 50,000 libraries and take a nigga. Upset this country. I can just see Huntley and Brinkley now. Where are the niggers going? I don't know, David. Say, it is a pleasure being here with you youngsters this evening. I will be speaking to you for a few minutes, but before I start, let me say a few words that I've been going all over the country since September, lecturing at all the colleges and universities. And I read my mail, and I have a lot of people that write me and say, "You know, you talked about the social conditions and the problems very eloquently, but you didn't give us no solutions to solve the problem. Now, maybe I can save you a stamp." I have no intentions tonight to discuss with you anything but the symptoms of this problem. I feel very strongly that because you get sick in the course of the year and I get sick in the course of the year, you do not qualify the doctor on me, nor do I qualify the doctor on you until we've gone to med school. And I personally feel that a team of medical researchers would do us laymen a great disservice if they put out a medical book for us laymen and discussed anything but the symptoms. Because the minute they start getting into the cure, what I have limited background, well, you know what we're gonna do, start setting up them do-it-yourself kits. "Come on, Ed, let's go get drunk." "Oh, hell no, we operating on Grandpa tonight." "Yeah, right in the book, just say, cut his heart out, you know." "So you're gonna put him to sleep?" "Didn't say nothing about that, just say, cut his heart out, you know." "You think it'll hurt him?" "I don't think so, he's been dead for 4 days, you know." Another large group of letters I seem to be getting is people telling me that they know I'm dedicated to nonviolence, not as a tactic, but an ideology. I am a pacifist and a vegetarian. And they question in my lecture why I talk so much about violence and how you could be nonviolent and committed to nonviolence and talk about violence. Again, maybe I can save you a stamp that my nonviolent belief has nothing to do with the violence that exists in this country, and anybody that's informed about this country couldn't talk 5 minutes about her ills without discussing the tremendous amount of violence that exists in America. And so I will be discussing violence. I am against violence for myself. I don't go around preaching to groups about being nonviolent. I would never eat meat because in my own silly, insane way, I believe in the eyes of nature, the animal has a function here other than for us to eat him, and I have a function other than for a bear to eat me. And the day I run out and catch me a deer and bring home for my loved ones to survive, that's the day I'll be honest enough for the deer to catch my loved ones and take to the forest so his loved ones can survive. But the fact that I am a vegetarian and I profoundly am against eating meat, I would never knock a steak out of your hand at all. I would never frown or never tell you why you shouldn't eat meat. That's your hang up. I know I'm gonna live 20, 30 years longer than you. And when I march down the street, I never had no violent niggas run up to me and slap my picket sign out my hand and try to teach me some other songs. They stayed pretty much out of the nonviolent movement. And if the violent cats ever start marching, I'm not going knocking no machine guns out of their hand, trying to teach them we shall overcome, no more than I'm gonna swap a steak out of your plate for some turnips. And so my nonviolence is committed to me, me alone. I'd also like to say that I am not here to impress you tonight, only to inform you, and when I leave here, I couldn't care less about what you think about me in no shape, form, or fashion. I'll always have the one consolation of always knowing that whenever we wake up, today, tomorrow, 20 years from now, and I'll have the one consolation of knowing that you'll always be able to say, Brother Greg didn't lie to us. And I think the number one basic problem we have, and the number one basic problem that you young folks is going to have to deal with today, is not the problem of air pollution, but is this problem of moral pollution. And I don't give a damn what side of the fence you fall on or where you're thinking is. You young folks are in problems and troubles because we've used up all the tricks, man. No more tricks, neither way. Be sure and understand I'm not here copping no help. I'm not asking you to help me solve nothing or change your ways or change your beliefs or none of that. And I'm against a lot of people that run around thinking they're gonna solve the problem with an atmosphere of love and all of that noise, because I am for the United States Constitution. And if you truly believe in the United States Constitution, then a man has a right to call me a nigger. That's freedom of speech. The Constitution did not say good speech or bad speech. So you have a right to call me a nigger, but please don't spit on me. You have a right to hate me. That is freedom of expression, which the Constitution hate is nothing but an expression. So all of this insanity, man, that's why the far, far left ain't nothing but a bunch of fascists and don't even know it. They scared the hell out of me lately. And so I think if we're going to use the Constitution as a guideline, we should hold to it and work on both sides and let everybody be able to be covered on the United States Constitution. And when they veer off of it, bust them. I feel that a man has a right not to want to live next door to me, and what gives him that right is he has the right to move out. But he do not have a right not to want me to live next door to him, because the same right that give him freedom to move out gives me freedom to move in. Let's stick with the Constitution. And all this noise about education and all that, that's not in the Constitution. I have a right, born in America, to be ignorant and brilliant. If I want, I'm still covered under the United States Constitution. Don't set up no phony qualifications for me to get my thing. And so honesty is the number one problem that you young folks is going to be confronted with. If we become honest, we might can solve this problem. The frightening thing about this social problem and the myth and the insanity about it, that if these social conditions existed in any other country on the face of this earth, we could solve it. We have the know-how, the finance, and the intellectual ability, and we could muster up the moral capability to solve it. But in this country, we keep passing the buck with it and keep trying to solve it from means other than the way the Constitution said solve it. And this is where we run into a tremendous problem. I think the first thing we're gonna have to do to even approach the problem is gonna have to become totally honest and admit America is the number one racist country on the face of this earth, bar none. Now, usually when a black man says that, a lot of whiteys get uptight. That's the racism that exists in your own head. Because I did not say American white folks was the number one racist, I said America. And one day when we can think clear enough to realize that black and white folks that was born in this country are Americans, and then when you hear a statement that say America is the number one most racist country, that also means black folks and white folks. And white people are they fight in the fact that we are racist too. They don't want to believe that, but you're damn right we're racist. Hell, we learned it from you. We watched you for 400 years. We picked up your good habits and your bad habits. We picked up your sweet behavior and your bitter behavior. It was very interesting when Stokely Carmichael yelled, "We don't want no more white folks in the movement, man." White went crazy. And them editorials and more racist papers saying, "That's reverse racism." Now, what is that? Is it? Oh, hell no, I got a right to hate you the same forward way you hate me. Don't tell me I gotta go to no back door, throw no brick at you. Reverse racism. And to be perfectly frank, it was the first honest, beautiful statement that was made in the history of the civil rights movement. It was a very honest statement. What we were saying is, we tired of all these young, guilty, northern, hung-up white kids coming down south with all their hang-ups, bugging our redneck Mississippi cracker when they can't take a nigga home with them in the suburbs of New York, Chicago, Detroit, or Cleveland. And it was a very honorable statement, whether you like it or not. We're saying before you go down south and bug that redneck Mississippi cracker, you go to the suburbs and bug your own mammy and daddy and see how they feel. That's all. Because once you bug your mother and father and see how they feel, then maybe you'll have a little passion in dealing with that redneck cracker down south. Because you find out that mom and daddy in many instances act the same way as he acted, just in a gray flannel suit and evening dress, and he wears a sheet. So it was a very honorable statement that was made. A lot of people got hung up behind it. I'm so damn sick and tired of people asking me about Stokely Carmichael and Rap Brown. You know, it's very interesting if you want to test the insanity level of this country. You see, when nations go insane, they act the same way as people when they go insane. I'm listed in the phone book in Chicago, so I get a lot of people call me up and say, "Mr. Gregory, I just finished looking at the television. Matt Dillon's going to come through and get me." And I understand that they're insane. And that when you become insane, you think everybody wants you. This country has become so insane, all at once she thinks, you know, Red China wants her, everybody wants her, you know. And insane people act, you know, so strange. You know, all at once we're afraid of communism taking over the world. But Russia is not off limits to American tourists. So what are we afraid of? Communism, or are we afraid of yellow communism? The Russian ballet still comes to America, and if you don't get a ticket 6 months in advance, you cannot get in to see the Russian ballet. And it ain't because the patriots want to go there and throw bricks at them. We bring Russian exchange students to this country and put them in our colleges and universities. So what communism are we afraid of? Stalin's daughter just split and came on over here. Nobody seems to be afraid. So what are we afraid of? I'm sure that somewhere down the line, you sitting out there have to have enough intelligence to understand that if I am paying a cat to jump on your mother and attack her, and you know I'm paying this guy to do this, then you got to have enough passion for your own family to understand that if you don't have enough sense to attack me and stop it from where it begins, at least you're not going to be going out having cocktails with me. And we in this country know that it is Moscow, Russia, that's supplying the missiles and the bulk of the ammunition and supplying all of the materials to keep that war going on. And we still having cocktails, still bringing Russian exchange students. Who are we fooling, huh? So what's wrong with us? What kind of games are we playing? And this is what you youngsters are going to have to deal with somewhere down the line. That war over there is so funny. You got Communist China on this side, and right next to Communist China in the middle, you got the Nationalist Vietnamese, and on the other side of them, you got another group of communists. Now, we fixed to knock out the only buffer in between so the communists can join. But insane nations act like insane people. America is supposed to be the most powerful nation on the face of this earth. And a young man by the name of H. Rap Brown is 23 years old and don't own one bomb, one airplane, one fleet, have scared this country to death. Something wrong somewhere. I mean, when Stokely Carmichael yelled, "Black power," oh man, this country went insane. And white folks live so far away from, they don't know niggas went crazy too.
What they talking about? What's wrong with it? Why don't they shut up, you know?
But you know what's hip? And all of the discussions about black power, you've never heard a politician ever asked about black power. They're weird. Damn right. Because the Democrats in the large urban cities know that it's been black power that's been keeping them old syndicate, trampy Democrat machines in office for the last 40 years. The Republican Party knows it's been black power that's been keeping them out for the last 40 years, so they don't have to ask about black power. There's a lot of white folks in this country that knew what black power was. A lot of them ran to us just to see if we knew. And they got lied to again. Dr. King, what's black power mean? Well, we're not interested in black power. We're trying to get green power and integrated power. And so. We didn't ask that. We asked about black power and Stokely Carmichael. Who's that? Black power. A lot of people was legitimately hung up behind the word because of the racism that exists. You know, I was very interested when I decided that I had to be a racist because born and raised in a country that's preached and practiced racism for 400 years, I have to be a part of it. And so I struck out to find it. I took a lie detector test and passed it. Can't ask me, sir. Do you hate white folks? And I said, no. He said, are you mad at him? I said, wait, I didn't pay you to ask me that. And he went for himself and got to ask me a whole lot of groovy questions. And I passed them all, you know. And my wife was upset. My friend said, oh, man, you know, you know. I said, you damn lie. No, I'm a racist, man. America's a racist country, and I'm American. There's a few whiteys, man, that slip through without being racist. I advocate that any time a black man tell you he's not a racist, he's telling you a damn lie. It's really a racist statement because what he's telling you, he's been born and raised in a country that's preached and practiced racism for 400 years and he's not a part of it. I say he's lying, man. He might not know it, but he's part of it. Because in order not to be a racist and be black, you have to be super inhuman, and that's racist thinking when you think you're more human than everybody else. And so one day, sitting on a plane flying from California to Chicago, trying to go to sleep, I found my racism, man. I asked myself one simple question, man. I said, boy, if you had to lose your black wife in the morning to another man and you had a choice of losing her to a black boy or a white boy, which one would you take? And I found mine, man. I picked the black cat. Under the false pretenses that I didn't want my colored friends laughing at me about losing my wife to a white cat. I don't care what you hide it under, that's racism. And the frightening thing is, all of us alive in this country today is not responsible and shouldn't be ashamed of the racism that exists. Hell, it was here when we got here. We inherited it. The sad, sick commentary is 1967 and we still refuse to admit that it exists. That's frightening. Well, we're going to have to admit it eventually because if we don't solve this problem in the next 3 years, this problem will solve us. This country will fold from the inside. And so it's racist thinking that made a lot of people legitimately afraid of black power. If we'd have got out there just hollering, we want power, we want power. Why are you saying, yeah, you come get power, you come get power. Power didn't scare nobody, man. Black. When you talk about folks in this country and black folks, and a lot of people get that racist connotation of black. Dirty, snatch pocketbooks, rape, and molest. And you add dirty, snatch pocketbooks, two rape and a molest, and put power on that. I said, what the hell they want? Damn it! And that scared a lot of cats, man. And then a lot of people was legitimately frightened because they know what white power means. An army, a navy, marines, bombs, napalms, hand grenades, and a dog like LBJ. And so when Stoker yelled black power, it's very interesting because we have no business with black power in this country if the Constitution was lived up to the letter. Because for every one colored cat living here, it'd be 12 white cats on each side of us. We'd be so meek and humble, man, we'd be joining the Ku Klux Klan. But if you put 22 million roaches over on one segment, you're going to have roach power whether you like it or not. You know, I never worry when I walk down the street about a gorilla or elephant jumping on me. But every summer when I take my little kids to the Brookville Zoo in Chicago, I kind of get a sneaky suspicion that if I'm ever attacked by an elephant or gorilla, it's going to happen here because this is animal power.
And so when Stokely yelled Black Power, I get a phone call. Guy said, New York Times, Mr. Gregory, it's 4 o'clock in the morning, sorry to wake you up so early. Well, why do you wake me up? Well, Stokely called me, just yelled Black Power, and we were going to press, and we want to know, what is Black Power? I said, oh, Whitey, you got to be tricking me, man. You're all at once, man. It's come to the dumbest nation on the face of the earth. Nobody knows what Black Power is. They got to come to us for the word. And I tried to explain to them that 2 months ago, you got your pictures back from the moon. You never called me up and asked me, were they the right pictures? And you get two simple words like Black Power, and it just busts open your whole intelligence box. I said, well, I'm not going to tell you what it is. But I tell you what to do. You go get a white boy's dictionary. Go and get one of them dictionaries. Get Webster and open it up one day. Get drunk, though. Open it up and look up the word black. It says opposite of white, and just write it on a little piece of paper and put it in your pocket. About 2 weeks later, get drunk again and open up that same dictionary and look up the word power. It says force, the ability to change through force and right. And about a month later, get sloppy drunk and open both up a piece of paper up and read them together. Black, opposite of white, power, force, the ability to change through force and right. And that's all Black Power is. What the hell are we talking about? And if you want to know how my brother really feels about it, you ever go to him and make him think you really don't know what it is and let him define it for you, he's going to lie to you. Man, we got people thinking Black Power means everything. That old trampy American history book that I really didn't want to read, and they made me read it, like they made me read the United States Constitution, Declaration of Independence. I'm in all black school, too. I said, oh, man, this don't pertain to us. What the hell I'm reading this for? And I mean, that school I was in was so black, we didn't even have white mice in the research department. And so I said, all right, y'all force me, I'll read it. One day you might be sorry. And I'm glad I read that old trampy American history book. And it's, I imagine that's the, you know, how do we take a history book like this and we wonder why people hate us all over the world? You ever read that history book? Just open it up one day and read. The first page is beautiful. Here's a cat that wanted to get away from the yoke of oppression, from the king and the queen. And he wanted to go and find him a free land where he could practice his religion without being oppressed. I say, groovy, man, he should have stopped right there. You turn to page 2, now he sits off for the trip, he stole us. Now that's a hell of a prayer meeting, man. Then he came over here and discovered a country that was already occupied. Now how do you do that? And we print it and we give it to the little kids and they read about it. Yeah. That's like me going outside and you and your lady sitting out in your car, me and my old lady see it, and she said, oh, that's a nice car, I want it. I said, let's discover it. And I go and take Oldsmobile off of it while y'all kissing and put Do I Diddy on it. And I go and snatch the door. I say, all right, get the hell out that car. Me and my old lady just discovered this. I said, well, this is my Oldsmobile. I said, damn, I know him. This Do I Did It. Get on out of there. He said, well, son of a gun, it sure is. So, what me and my old lady going to do now? I said, get on up on the reservation, you know. And so when Rap Brown and them cats get to yelling and screaming, man, I'm glad they made me read that old history book now. I turn through it now and flip through it every now and then. I said, why don't they behave themselves? Look what they're doing in Watson, in Harlem, and in Detroit. Well, man, you open up the American history book, man, and here you got a bunch of cats bragging that we had the damnedest Revolutionary War in modern times over a tax on tea. Cat wasn't worrying about the British lynching them, torn and feathering them. Don't worry about no job, no neighborhood. Tea, man. 1967, 80% of America don't drink tea. Now, I mean, you got to be honest with yourself and realize that black folks and white folks don't differ that much. That if your founding fathers can tear up the colonies,
over a tax on tea, man, we bring this country down to her knees over our livelihood. We ain't talking about nothing you put in a cup and drink. Somewhere people don't seem to understand. So the niggas ain't doing nothing but tearing up their own areas. Well, George Washington and them heathens didn't shoot one shot in the king's mansion. He tore up his colonies. And don't be insane enough to believe that that was Britain's tea we threw in the bay. We didn't call it a Britain tea party. That was our tea. No, Britain wasn't going to send nothing over here on credit with them hostile cats. And so Rap Brown say, get a gun, nigga. And everybody get upset. I say, well, damn, man. The Minutemen got guns and ain't nobody upset. Maybe white folks will get upset one day when you find out Minutemen gonna kill you. They ain't gonna mess with us. You couldn't give a Minuteman $1 million and a tank and send him to Harlem. And all that dynamite that you know the Minutemen got buried in your little lily white suburbs, if it blow up one day accidentally and wipe out whole blocks of white folks, then you go take the dynamite away from them. Ha, ha, ha. That Brown said, get a gun, nigga. He said it about 2 months after the National Rifle Association and that long article they came out with that niggas is getting out of hand, all white folks ought to get a rifle. And nobody got upset over that. Maybe it's because that the National Rifle Association is subsidized by the federal government and Rap Brown was not. Maybe if Rap was subsidized by the federal government, then that lets him tell, get a gun, nigga, and nobody gets upset. Rap Brown said, get a gun, you niggas, and watch the police. And man, the country went crazy. What's he trying to do? You got to get a law. No, man, it's right in that damn American history book. Paul Revere rode through the white community and said, get a gun, white folks. The British is coming. The British was the police, man. I don't know. Paul Revere, all them cats, man. And the cat talking about, y'all be nonviolent. Well, why you bring Matt Dillon in my house once a week teaching me it's a virtue to shoot straight? Yeah, my kid, my four-year-old daughter, hip to him. Yeah, she told me, say, Daddy, say, I thought colored folks had a lot of illegitimacy and shacked up a lot. Shh, don't say that. I said, shh, don't say that. Don't your mother hear. She said, no, Dad, I look at Matt Dillon, been looking at him ever since I've been able to watch television. I know he and Kitty doing something. Talk about nonviolent. You know, the most violent I ever been in my life when I was 7 years old and joined the Whitey Boy Scouts. They gave me a hatchet, a dagger, and taught me how to make a fire without a match. All that brotherly love. Patrick Henry said, give me liberty, give me death. I know y'all ain't insane enough to believe he meant, you know, saying we shall overcome. You know, that wasn't what he meant by that. He's talking about doing that thing, man. And I'll admit that we in the civil rights movement messed up nonviolence. Because nonviolence is a very beautiful philosophy, man. When it becomes a ideology and not a tactic, it's very beautiful as a tactic. But it's purely beautiful as an ideology. And all it means that because you are nature, there's nothing you could ever do to me to make me commit an act of violence to you, personally, bodily. If it meant you killing me, or me killing you to stop you, I'd have to let you kill me. That's very beautiful. A lot of people think it's cowardism, but no, it's not. But we messed up nonviolence because dealing in a racist thinking society, we took nonviolence as beautiful as it was and played a game with it and gave this system what they wanted to see. Because nonviolence did not mean one of them old racist cracker sheriffs shooting your line, drop tear gas on you. You ain't supposed to go to the police station and pray for that cracker. But it made a good freak show. And everybody just looked at it. But what was happening, we lost a lot of groovy white cats and colored cats, man, that would never come across. That would have been nonviolent, committedly, but not with that type of trick we was running down. And so now the movement is getting completely honest now.
And we losing a lot of dishonest people, and we losing a lot of sincere people that just don't understand. Which is groovy. Every time you hear somebody say, well, what about all the good white folks we losing? Well, man, let me tell you something, because I don't have to tell you that's in it that know what's happening. For every white cat and black cat we've lost because we've gotten honest, we've gained 10 groovy whiteys and some blackies, baby, that never would have joined us when we was lying and making a game out of the thing. Believe me. And that's why you ain't heard us hollering for no help. We ain't the cats that's hollering for help is the cats that's still lying to you. SNCC ain't going out of business. You ain't never picked up paper and read where militant cats and starved. And you know the interesting thing about Stokely and Rapp, Malcolm X, take everybody, the country, black folks, white folks, the government, the CIA, the FBI, the president, not one cat's ever been able to come out and say Stokely, Rapp, or the militant cats have lied on us. Not one. Not one. That's a hell of a thing. Every time Stokely opened up his mouth, nobody's ever been able to say, he's lying. No one. J. Edgar Hoover, man, runs right there, a communist in the civil rights movement. Well, that's beautiful, because the first time J. Edgar Hoover says it's not, that's when I believe it is. Communist in the civil rights movement. Say, name them. You know, otherwise, you know, like you doing the civil rights movement more harm and doing the communists more good. Name them, since you know who they are, Mr. FBI. Put your finger on them and point them out. And this old country's so busy worrying about American communists, man, them the last cats I'd worry about. Anytime you see somebody that gave some secrets to the big boys in Russia, who was it? Some old patriotic army sergeant. Or some old patriot that's been so patriotic and cleared to do top secret work by the House Un-American Activity. Clearly, gave him his card and found out he'd been giving secrets away. He never picked up paper and read where American communists ever gave no secrets away. And American communists are some groovy cats. They want to be communists under this Constitution, man. They ain't going nowhere. They ain't going nowhere. Where they going? And 3/4 of the Communist Party in this country's FBI agents, that's an infiltrated it. So on a catwalk, I'm saying, I saw you talking to a communist the other day. I said, well, was he ours or theirs? That's why we ought to pass a law and make all FBI agents who's communists wear cowbells. I say, I'm a communist, and you hear something go, boom, boom. And so people say, you know, they tell me all the time, y'all got to slow up on your demonstrations. You're going to alienate a lot of your friends. You got to go slow. Let me tell you something, every time I go out and demonstrate for my civil rights, I hope it bugs this country as much as her civil wrongs have bugged me. I couldn't care less, one way or the other. One way or the other, man. I'm out here dodging these bricks and these bullets. I ain't thinking about no love. And I think one day we're going to have to wake up in this country and realize that nonviolence is not an obligation, it's a favor. For some reason, everything might think black folks supposed to be nonviolent. For what? Go check your laws. We didn't put one law on the book. Those white folks put those laws on the book. You can't find one law say you're supposed to lay your head down, pray for something to hit you in your head. Matter of fact, the Constitution gives you a right to carry a gun in your house to protect your body and your property. But all at once, we got to be, no, nonviolence is not an obligation, it's a favor. And anytime a man do you a favor, and you aggravate him, it is up to his discretion to take the favor back, not yours. And so I hear people say, well, violence have hurt. No, man. If a lot of white folks really thought violence was hurting, man, they wouldn't tell us about it. The fact that they keep yelling it means they want it to hurt us. But it happened. It should, but in a country so dirty and insane and fouled up as this nation here, violence have helped, and that's sick, man. That is really pitiful. Just like if I walk out here tonight and snatch a pocketbook from one of you girls, and on the way out, five cats snatch the pocketbook from me, and then three cats snatch it from them five, it's six of us that can't go to the police because we was wrong to begin with. The same way violence. And then but hell. And I don't understand people who don't understand Detroit and Watts, because maybe we're reading the wrong Declaration of Independence. And I would say maybe you should go and check out the Declaration of Independence and read the real one, and maybe you'd understand Watts and Detroit, or maybe we would march and burn it up. because the Declaration of Independence kind of justifies Watts and Detroit and Cleveland. The Declaration of Independence that I read simply states, we hold these truths to be self-evident that all men are created equal and endowed by the Creator with certain unalienable rights, that when these rights are destroyed over long periods of time, it is your duty to destroy or abolish that government. Evidently, we're not reading the right one. Or maybe we should go back and put white only on it. But now I'm 5 years old, man, going to school. By the time I get 7, here old black teacher standing in front of me talking about Declaration of Independence. Destroy, abolish that government. I kept saying, I wonder what they're talking about now. Then all at once I look around and see Watts go up and Detroit go up. And as far as I'm concerned, it's just a bunch of cats that read the Declaration of Independence. I'm not saying the Declaration of Independence is right, but I think we ought to quit teaching it. If we're gonna have such violent reactions when you start living up to it. And so, you know, like everybody's talking about Rapp and Stokely. And I wonder, you know, are we so insane that we just can't stop for 5 minutes and just drop our hang-ups in a closet by ourselves and say, why are they acting like that? What happened? In New York City last week, how many of you, raise your hand, how many of you are aware of the fact those three cats were sitting in the restaurant eating and the other white cat came in with a machine gun and killed all three of them? Many of you aware of that here in the room? Raise your hand if you are. That way, you see how few people know about it. This was not in China. It's in New York City last Sunday week. Three cats eating dinner, man. And the cat came in with a machine gun and boom, 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 and killed all three of them. And you don't know about that, but if I've been a nigga walking there with a baseball bat chasing Whitey, or a nigga running in shooting at some other niggas in the NAACP, this would have been all everybody would talk about. Well, I wonder what, it's just awful what they do. Man, you haven't got no exclusive rights on murder. Understand that, please. And so I say, if you understood and if you had gone through what Stokely and Rapp had gone through, man, it's hard to say what you'd be doing now, but I was there with them. That's a hell of a thing, man, to be in Mississippi, USA. And when you first get down there, man, 6 years ago, when we started the big push, you lived by the second. That was your hang-up, though, because white ain't never been that vicious. Then if you stayed there a couple of days, you learn to live by the minute. That was still your hang-up, because Whitey ain't that vicious. And after about 2 weeks, you learn to live by the hour. That was still your hang-up, because he ain't that vicious. And then after you've been there and got a little groovy, you learn to live by the day. Now that's Mellon, because he is that vicious. If you give him 24 hours, he will wear you out. And so that's a hell of a thing, man, for those kids, Stokely and Rapp and them. Young kids, I'm not talking about men. 6 years ago, when I first met Rapp, he was 17 years old, man. It's a hell of a thing to put on a 17-year-old kid to live by the day. And then you go to the SNCC house in Greenwood, Mississippi at Saturday when they pull out the keg of nails and get the brew out and get the drinking and can on. Cassie didn't even drink was drinking, man, because when you made Saturday, you made a week. Whew, man, you made a week. And you turn, you give it to one of them northern whiteys or black and say, here, brother, take a swig. You made a week. He said, no, I just been here 2 days. He said, you don't understand how we count. When you make Saturday, that's a week, baby. Don't make no difference when you start counting. Yeah, that's a hell of a feeling, man. How would you like laying on top of this roof tonight as a lookout for a bunch of cracker Klansmen that might blow the building up and you ain't got no gun, man? You laying up there nonviolently, and if you see them coming, you got to slide down the back with a rope and say, let's split, they're coming, man. Yeah, that's what we went through in that nonviolent movement, man. Laying on top of your roof, man, watching a chump that don't only have a gun but can use it legally without a gun. And then Saturday rolls around, you break your thing open and Rapp and SNCC and Stokely gear to that little white kid there from Connecticut. How you doing, brother? What's your name? Ed. It's a hell of a painful feeling to go through. You're sleeping on the floor.
And your comrades come up missing. The only way you know they're missing, they're so new, some of them you don't even know their name. You just know that there's some vacant spots on the floor, so somebody didn't show up. And anytime somebody don't show up for dinner, he ain't coming, man. And then we was losing as many as 10 and 20 a day. We didn't tell you. Wasn't worried about you. We didn't want to scare the niggas out the movement. And that's all they needed, man, for us to say, ooh, they just killed 20 today. And brother said, well, I would go down there, but you already, you took a cop. I would be down, Mr. Which great, but I'm too violent. How many white folks you kill? I ain't killed no. What make you think you violent, nigga? You scared. And the press or the police never reported it. And so when you turn to this white cat and you give him this brew, this scotch, and he looks at you and says, oh no, man, thank you very much, I don't drink. I said, come on, Ed, and he don't drink, and he sincerely do not drink, man. Because he's not worried about his parents finding out about it, because they're in Connecticut somewhere at a cocktail party. They don't know what he doing in Greenwood. And so you get through Saturday, and then Sunday roll around, and you got to go back out and start living by the day. And then Monday, the old sheriff come knock on your Greenwood, Mississippi headquarters door. Come on, sneak niggas, wake up! That's the sheriff. You know it's him, man. You learn to love him. You miss that tune when he don't come by. And you run to the door, rap, stoke this snake, and say, yeah, man, what's going on? Says, come over to the station and identify your three workers. They're dead over there, drunken driving. And when he says come, he don't mean he's gonna take you. He's gonna split, and you go over at Stokely or Rapp or Sneak Workers, and you look on the floor. They don't even put civil rights workers in the slab, man. On the floor, and you look, and it's nothing but a revolutionary casualty. Yeah. And then the old sheriff takes his foot and he rolls this white boy over. He just kicks him over. And you look at him, and the sheriff look at you, and he noticed a different look on your face this time, because he know you used to seeing this, but the sheriff gets scared now because he sees a strange look on your face, man. And it is a strange look on your face because you've already justified he's going to kill you, but you want him to use a little intelligence about it. And here this white boy that the sheriff just told you was the driver. You drive him drunk and you see all that alcohol he poured on. But what the sheriff don't know, that's Ed from Connecticut that didn't take a drink Saturday. You know he don't drink. The sheriff didn't know it. And that's why you look strange. The other two cats drink, man. But he get the one cat that you know don't drink and says he was the driver. And the sheriff know you upset, man, for some reason. And so you say, I don't believe it. He said, I'll take you to the spot. And the sheriff start driving you around. You know he guilty. And you go to the spot and you see the hole in the bridge where the car went through. And you say, well, where's the skid marks? And he takes out that old handkerchief like they usually do and wipe that sweat. Says, well, you know, nigga lovers and white folks get together, they do strange things. I don't know where they are. And you go on back to the headquarters and you sit down, you write a letter home. And perversely, this white kid, you write his mother and daddy and explain to him that he didn't disgrace the family. He did not drink. You know he did not drink. That the sheriff and the Klan killed him. And 2 weeks later, you get a letter back from this little kid's mother asking you what kind of animals are in SNCC. How could you teach her good son to drink? He came down to help the colored folks and ends up a drunk in 3 weeks' time. And the only reason she knows that he learned how to drink there is because that awful lie you told in the tail end of the letter about the sheriff and the police participating in killing her boy. And she knows this could never happen in her America. So you burned the letter up. And feel like calling up on the phone and say, well, since this is your America, it's so beautiful, why don't you send your two daughters down here? And then you get that bad rap that the only reason we didn't integrate the schools down there is because niggas didn't want to integrate. We worked and bugged everybody and got the law pushed, and all the officials say, look at them, they don't even want to integrate the schools. We got the doors open, they don't come. And everybody in their right mind knew why we wasn't integrating the schools. And then Stokely and Rapp and them got upset about that bad rap. And then they went through the Negro community with them SNCC kids, July and August, convincing those black parents that we got to have your 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10-year-old kid to integrate these schools, because white folks are saying we don't want to integrate. And for 2 months, man, in June and July and August, man, while we was out having vacations and our little summer jobs and going out on our picnics, they was in that black community in Mississippi, convincing those black folks, you can take editorials from the New York Times, here, look, the president said he's not going to permit no violence. This is the law of the land. And by the last of August, you finally convinced 12 black families to let you have their kids. And you go out and you buy them something new. And then the first day of September, you go by the house to pick up those 12 kids and find out overnight you just got 8 now because 4 of them cats copped out. And that's a hell of a feeling to go in and pick up this little 5-year-old kid and put his hand in your hand and take him out in the car and see that same look on his face that 5-year-old kids have on their face when they just start in school. And as you get in the car, he looks at you and says, how come mommy and daddy's not going? And you got to lie to him because you can't tell him mommy and daddy's scared. You say, well, they'll be by this evening. And as you drive and you hear him talk about crayons and chalk and playing in the sand. And then you get a block before you get to the school and you see this old sheriff standing out there saying, where you going, boys? We're going to school here. Say, well, park that damn car. You can't bring it here. That little beautiful 5-year-old kid say, morning, sir. And you park and you get out and you walk in with a 5-year-old kid's hand in your hand, man. And you know this is not the way you felt when you went to school, but he feels the same way you felt. You can't believe that nature's that beautiful. And then it dawns on you, you got a handful of sweat, man, inside. This 5-year-old kid's hands in your hand, and none of it's coming from him. It's all you. Because you see something about 100 yards away standing on those stairs, and anytime you see that, you know something's going to happen, man, because you know what it looks like. And as you approach the steps, it happens. You get attacked, not only by the mob, but by the police, and get knocked down. Next thing you know, you land in the gutter with this cracker's foot in your chest and this shotgun on your throat telling you, move, nigga, I'll get you for false arrest. And now you got a chance of moving, being shot for resisting arrest, or laying there getting killed. And then dawn on you, today's your day, man. Yeah, today's the day somebody come look at you in the morgue. And not until then do you start relating with the elements around you. And you look up and you see the FBI taking pictures, motion pictures that will never show. And then you realize as you lay there that you're missing that 5-year-old hand inside your hand. And you look up just in time to see him. Yep, just in time to see him get hit right in the mouth with a brick. You got to see it, and see it under those conditions that he can't run and scream and holler like a normal 5-year-old that would run to an adult holding his mouth, because every time he got ready to run to an adult, they were spitting at him and kicking on him, and then one finally stomped him down in the ground, and your last final look you got to see is they pulled you out and put you in the wagon to take you to jail. So you get out of jail that evening, only to find out the horror of horrors, man. You get back to the SNCC headquarters in Greenwood, Mississippi, they tell you you got to get the hell out of town real quick, man. I say, why, man? You remember that black parent you convinced that the federal government was going to see to it wouldn't nothing happen to his kid? Yeah, man. Well, he just came by here 5 times looking for you for a shotgun. He going to kill you, man, after he looked at his kid's mouth, man. That nigga ain't going to kill him, crackers. He going to kill you. And you got to get out of town, man, because you know if he kill you, man, he'll get a medal for it. And y'all wonder what's wrong with Stokely and Rapp and the SNCC kids, huh? Well, I tell you what, you try it. 5 years, 6 years, they screamed, man, please help, do something for us. And we was too busy having fun. And now they're not saying do something for us. They're saying here's what we're gonna do to you. And everybody's screaming for help now, and they don't hear you today no more than you heard them. Yep, we used up all the tricks. And we're tired of the insults. We're not worried that much about rights. Hell, these insults we got to put up with 24 hours a day. And my country tell me that it's a possibility. I get drafted in the Army next week, and I got to go to Vietnam to guarantee some foreigner instant freedom while my 6 black kids in Chicago is told to get theirs on the installment plan. Oh, no, man, I can't think this silly anymore. No, indeed, man. And you young folks are in trouble. And don't think I'm sitting here threatening you. This is a promise. You're in trouble because you're dealing with a different type of black man today. 20, 30 years ago, black folks in this country had an empty belly.
Today, black people got a full stomach and a hungry mind. A hungry mind will not tolerate the same thing an empty stomach did. Empty stomachs deal on smell, and hungry minds deal on sound. And all at once, this country don't sound right to us anymore, whether you like it or not. Yeah. 2 years ago, 5 white boys burned up their draft card. And in 3 weeks' time, the Senate and Congress and passed an anti-draft card burning bill, but we can't get an anti-lynching bill pushed through in 100 years. My country just told me she thinks more of a piece of cardboard than she do my black mama. I'll bring her to her knees for that. This is what we're talking about. A country that keeps telling us, well, education's your problem. No, man, we fixing to hit niggas in the head just talking that silly. Education's not our problem. No, indeed, man. We got 680,000 soldiers in Vietnam tonight with a commitment with their lives to free them Vietnamese instantly, and not one white or black Americans ever questioned that Vietnamese educational standard. Well, brother, if you didn't question his, you better not question mine. And education, man, we out of that trick now anyway. You realize how many millions of people would be dead today on the face of this earth if it were not for blood plasma? Are you aware of the fact that an American Negro by the name of Charlie Drew, and don't take my word for it, go to your library and check it. An American Negro by the name of Charlie Drew invented blood plasma. Old Charlie Drew bled to death in an Atlanta, Georgia hospital waiting room after an automobile accident because they didn't accept niggas. So don't tell us about education, man. We don't want to hear it. The man with the education and the wisdom to give blood plasma to the world, and he died from the lack of it in America because his face was black. And then people say, well, why don't you quit demonstrating and get down the ghetto and clean your brother up, clean up the morality rate, and pull him up by his bootstraps? Well, you got to give him some boots first. Well, what about Negro morality? And let me tell my colored sisters something tonight, because y'all really seem to get a little upset when white folks tell us that 20% of the colored women in America has illegitimate babies. Well, black sisters, let me tell you, don't get mad no more. They ain't lying on us at all. We've had a ball in the ghetto, baby. We've had a mellow time, baby. So don't go running around with your mouth all poked out when Whitey tell you that. 20% of the black women in this country has illegitimacy. 2% of the white women in this country have illegitimacy. But what this country better realize, one day, that if we ever get our hands on you white folks' abortion credit card, we'll show you how to knock a rate down. And for all you black folks, I wish you would quit defending dirty niggas that white folks tell you about. Say, I don't know why them niggas are so dirty and tap so much property, and you niggas just run around all day long like you ain't never seen a dirty, greasy, nappy-head nigga in your life. And you know damn well you have. And if white folks gave us a dollar piece for every dirty nigga we could bring to them, we could become a millionaire. What the hell you lying about? And we act like white folks. See, if white folks was as dumb as we wanted them to be, we'd have a groovy thing going. It's niggas that don't even eat watermelon in front of y'all. And think because we don't eat in front of you, you think we ain't eating it. Yeah, they really that insane, man. They ain't even had the wisdom to stop and think. Now, Whitey grows the watermelons. He harvests the watermelons. He puts them on a white train that takes them to Harlem. And when 27 train loads of watermelons, he's go to Harlem and the trains come back empty, Whitey know we doing something with them watermelons. So we spend half our time defending the truth. You're damn right, niggas is dirty in this country, but who dirted us up, man? If I cut you, you're gonna bleed. You had rich, brilliant, intellectual Jews that Hitler had in the concentration camp that was dirty and destructive, too. But Hitler, maybe he wasn't as insane as we was, because I imagine when Hitler walked past the concentration camp and saw them dirty, stinking Jews, I think he realized he had 500 Jews in the area that was built for 50, so he knew it was him that was dirtying them up. Has this system have dirtied me up? Don't take my word for it. You got research facilities here. Go out and do it yourself. Go to these cities and check out population per acre like we did. Los Angeles, California. Population per acre, there's 7.5 people per acre in Los Angeles. In Watts, there's 27.9. You're damn right I'm dirtier than you are. Every 7 white folks you got throwing gum wrappers on the ground, we got 27 niggas. You're damn right. Every 7 white folks you got in Los Angeles putting their garbage out, we got 27 niggas putting their garbage out. And the horrifying thing is, Whitey sends me the same amount of street cleaners per acre that he used for 7. He sends me the same amount for 27 and wonder why I'm dirty. Same amount of garbage collectors he used for 7 people per acre, he sends up to my neighborhood for 27 people per acre. You damn right it's garbage on my front, and if you don't straighten out something real quick, we're gonna move that garbage down to your backyard. And one day if we ever take over and put 27 white folks per acre while there's 7 black folks living per acre, you're gonna be dirtier than us. Ain't got a damn thing to do with your color. It's us. Just like it's this system that's dirtying us up today. These are the problems. I had people ask me, say, Greg, you think black folks ought to go to war in Vietnam? I don't think white boys ought to go to Vietnam. And the one beautiful thing about that Vietnam War, to show you the insanity, we got some sick whiteys over there, some sick racists, man, that left their lily white racist neighborhood and went to Vietnam with their life to guarantee a foreigner instant freedom with their life. They left Illinois, New York, Mississippi, Georgia, and if they got over there in Vietnam and won that war tonight and came back home to their little stinking white racist neighborhoods in New York, Illinois, Mississippi, and Georgia, and 2 weeks later that same Vietnamese they was ready to die for moved next door to them in America, they try to kill them. A nation this sick can't survive. Can't survive at all. Not at all. But yet in this country, we can justify a black man from Mississippi going to Vietnam, chasing a Viet Cong through the bushes of Vietnam, trying to kill him. But you cannot justify that same black man chasing a redneck cracker Ku Klux Klan through the swamps of Mississippi, trying to kill him. Now, wait a minute. When you stoop to the lowness of murder to solve your problem, you should use some intelligence about it. Hell, if Dick Gregory's in Vietnam tonight, the Viet Cong can only kill me. They cannot kill my 6 black kids in Chicago. This racist redneck crack in this country killed me, my wife, my 6 black kids, burn up my house, and blow my church up. If I'm ever gonna stoop to killing, who needs killing first? A cat that can only kill me or a cat can wipe out your whole family? This is what we're talking about. No more, no less. And then you get this insanity. People say, well, you're making progress. You got civil rights legislation. No, you white folks and silly niggas take that since you're so good. Give us the Constitution, man. I want my rights under that same piece of paper I pay my income tax by, that same piece of paper that draft me into war. That's what I want my rights by. And don't tell me about love or understanding, because when I pay my income tax, baby, when I fill out that form, I have never, so no question, they say, how many white folks like you? Did you create an atmosphere of love this year before you pay this money?